I'm excited. You're excited. We're excited. John, are you excited?
Oh, I've been excited all day waiting for this. I'm so excited to hang out. I'm so excited to be back on the show.
Yeah, even though you're not actually here. I apologize. I'm sorry. I failed you. I got a last minute notification from my job. They're like, we need you to do a George video and we need you to do in the Tiki Basement because we don't have enough bodies to do it remote. And I'm like, that means I got to break down the entire podcast studio to do a Verizon video. And then I thought I'd have time to put it back together again. And I'm like, I just don't have it in me. Work broke me today. So here we are, virtual once again, missing you, missing your face.
I miss you too, buddy. I miss little guy as well. Tell me
He's happy though. He had his friend Scarlett swing by before. So he got to see, you know, he's a big fan of like 6 to 8 year old girls.
I mean, everyone's got a demographic, right?
That's his. Like, I know he's got to have like an older girlfriend at some point. Like, that's his thing. Like, he likes his like older women and he just likes to like, come look at my toys. Let me show you what it's like to be Gabe.
I mean, in fairness, he does have a pretty impressive toy collection.
He has a pretty impressive toy collection. What are we going to talk about this week?
So this week is a big week. Talk about Blast from the Past. AFI is back again with a brand new album called Bodies. And we've definitely got some thoughts on that. Loki is finally here. The next Marvel Cinematic Television show on Disney Plus has arrived. And it is Loki. And it is really interesting. We've definitely got some thoughts on that. Mayor of Easttown was probably one of the best shows that I've seen this year. It might be show of the year. We have definitely got to talk about this a little bit, George. And finally, the new Eric Bana movie is called Dry. And we both watched it. We both definitely got some thoughts.
I love that you love Mayor of Easttown. You see, it's tough with me. I can never quite figure out your thought process behind what you want to watch when you watch it.
I like to keep you guessing, but also I don't even know.
And Mayor of Easttown's really fucking dark. Like that was, I actually was, so I watched the first two episodes without Allison. So I was like, I don't know. This is dark, dark. And then I'm like, you know what though? But it's also really good and dark. And you're right. We have tons of thoughts on that. Look, we're a couple weeks late on that one because we found out about it late. I would argue that it's actually a good thing that we got to binge it on one shot. So we could tell you right now if it's good or not. I wish I could do that for Loki, but we're going to have to wait that one out. I feel like when you say interesting, I worry because you had that same thing with WandaVision where you're like, I don't know. And I'm like, dummy snap. It was amazing. So I'm afraid of what you're going to say about Loki because I got all the vagina tingles from Loki.
Hey now.
But AFI, you're right. Cocktail. That's where we're going next. Cocktail. I'm sorry.
Well, in honor of the movie Dry, I thought, you know, we'd go with a thematic drink. So I'm going to teach you how to make the world's driest martini according to barnonedrinks.com. Now, for this, obviously, they're going to try to get you to make it in a martini glass. We all know how I feel about certain kinds of stemware, so fuck that shit. I want you to put a nice rocks glass with a nice big chunky ice cube in it. Get it nice and cool. Get it nice and chill. In a shaker, you are going to pour 2 ounces of gin and a half ounce of vermouth. Now, the idea of vermouth is always perplexing because everyone says, and I don't disagree, that to make a proper martini, you just kind of want to wave the bottle over the glass, but don't actually pour anything in. However, if you actually want it to get lip smack and dry, you got to pour a little vermouth in there. So this is a half ounce of vermouth. You may be even able to cut it to a quarter ounce, but this is going to be an incredibly dry martini. I recommend shaking it up in a shaker full of ice, strain it over that big chunky piece of ice. If you like to garnish it, you can garnish it with a lemon peel, a cocktail olive, or a cocktail onion. Either or. The world's driest martini, according to barnonedrinks.com.
I never liked martinis. I also have just realized, I don't think you've ever done a sangria on this show.
You know, I thought about that, and then I keep forgetting to make it. Sangria would be good. You know what? When it gets to the actual, like, summer portion of the show, I will teach everyone how to make a sangria. Well, I'll teach you how to make a, you know what we'll do? Month of July, month of sangrias. We'll teach you how to do a red, a white, and then some other stuff that I will Google and figure it out later.
Yeah, no, I sangria is one of my favorite summer drinks. That and the mojito. I feel like, you know, you can just sit back, you can sip it. It's both cocktail-y and winey, but I'm not a wine fan. I realize, so the one thing I realize, I don't think we've ever talked about it, is You know, I grew up, I'm a Gen Xer, a young Gen Xer, grew up in an era where you drank beer or you drank wine. If you're a bougie, you drank wine. If you were a man, you drank beer. And I didn't like either. Like, I've never liked beer or wine. I'm not a fan of it. I don't like that you have to, like, get an acquired taste for a drink to enjoy it. So I was always, like, felt weird that people just, you know, I didn't like drinking because I don't like the taste of those types of alcohol. And it wasn't until like 10 years ago that the cider started coming in vogue. And that was when our friend, my friend, Greg Gethard's wife, Alana, introduced me to Woodchuck cider, which was one of the first ciders that were readily available in bars and in stores. And then shortly after that, within the next 5 years, you know, Stella kind of blew open the whole cider industry with their cider. And obviously we have locally the... Woodchuck's the one I'm talking about. The other Angry Orchard, located in New York. If you can visit their orchard slash, I don't want to call it a winery, but their distillery, definitely check it out. It's awesome. But I realized that cider is actually a thing. I've always liked cocktails. I love cocktails. I was made fun of quite a bit for liking quote unquote fruity drinks until people actually, you know, I would say, here's my Mai Tai, and they would be floored after two. But, you know, that's me. I never liked, and that's why if you ever see me, I'm not usually drinking at parties because I just don't like beer or wine, and that's usually what's served. And there's my rant because I don't think people actually know my my drinking, you know, also why I'm not, you know, I don't partake as much. I, however, did recently, someone dropped off our house a flavor pack of Angry Orchard, so I recently had a mango, which was a very good cider, and I got to try the strawberry, too. And now I'm just rambling. Let us talk a little bit about... we are in the cocktail portion. I can ramble a little bit about cocktails.
I feel good about it.
The problem is that my voice blows out like halfway through the episode, and you feel it. You can hear it already, right? Like, it's already soft.
I can hear it a little bit,
I've been yelling all day. I've been on the phone with tech support. It's been a day. But AFI, one of my favorite bands, you know, you see them quite a bit when they were a skate punk band in the late 90s, turned into they pretty much created the modern era of like goth hardcore type music. I don't even want to call them hardcore. There was more of like a hardcore Cure than they were a horror rock band, even though they did cover Halloween and kind of got pigeonholed at. And then into their modern era, which is definitely more of like Cure than anything else. And just released their new album, Bodies. They have continuously released albums like every 3 years or so. So it's not like they've disappeared and come back. Like The Offspring, who didn't release an album for a decade. AFI has been continuously putting out music, reimagining themselves. This is it's definitely a par for the course of what AFI has been doing for the last 2, 3, 4 albums. What are your thoughts first?
You know, I really liked AFI, and I like that they've had essentially three acts, and they're essentially three different bands, because you have like Answer That and Stay Fashionable era AFI. You have the AFI that was leading a little more hardcore while trying to branch off into the Cure-ish style music. Like calling them a hardcore Cure, I think, was a really spot on description.
I thought so.
Yeah, I was trying to pop it. You just kept talking. I wanted to let you go. But yeah, they really kind of pivoted consistently throughout the course of their career. And you're right. When you do a Misfits cover, it's very easy to get pigeonholed into a certain sound. But they've always kind of broken free of that sound. And they've always been a band that was never afraid to grow and take things in different directions. You know, I think in the, you know, past the album with Girls Not Grey, once you hit like Miss Murder, it kind of started swinging. I don't want to say in the wrong direction, but a little too far from home base. Whereas consistently since, they've been kind of perfecting their sound and moving towards, you know, where we're at now with Bodies, which is the new album that just came out on June 11th. And I think that this is another example of a band that has kind of found their final form and their true sound.
That's a good way to look at it. I see a different breakdown in eras where I would see, say, from the first album up until the Days of the Fiend to Art of Drowning. I think they had a particular sound. I think it was Black Sails in the Sunset that really switched them over to the darker, you know, hardcore goth type sound that they then blew up with Sorrow and Sing the Sorrow and with December Underground. And I think that, I mean, obviously that was their biggest era. People, you know, those albums are much coveted, and definitely if you have them on vinyl, they're worth a fortune. I do not. Sad, sad, cry, cry. Then from Crash Love in 2009 up till now, I think they've really had a steady path of you know, melodic, you know, again, Akira is the only band I can really describe. Sisters of Mercy, if they didn't sound so 80s, but that type of music. I feel like this album, though, really, really toes the line with a lot of the electronica sound. And I found it a little hard to differentiate where the line between AFI and Black Audio begins and ends with this album. Do you know Black Audio?
I do. And I think that that's a really good light that you're shining on this, because I definitely think it's the two of them melting together into one super form.
And just for those that don't know, Black Audio, I think it's BLAQK or something like that, Audio, is Davey Havoc and Jade's side project, which is largely more of a EMD style, EDM style sound with, you know, more flavors of, you know, 80s goth dance type music. And it's really good. If you like that type of sound, you should definitely check it out. They have some really good pop songs on there too. But it definitely leans more towards a different sound than they had when they were doing Sing the Sorrow and December Underground, even Crash Love. This was a side project that was going on during then. Though they have released multiple albums since then. They actually, I didn't realize how prolific they were with releasing albums as Black Audio. But this album, I was like, oh, I don't know what I'm listening to. I don't know if this is an AFI album, if this is a Black Audio album, if there's something in between. I think there is definitely room for this type of sound in the world. I think they do it better than anyone else does it. And, you know, again, I'm really glad to see that, you know, look, it's hard. I don't want to sound like, because I hate to, if you go on any YouTube page and see any live performance of AFI, it is just straight down the middle. People either hate this AFI or they love, like, this is not my AFI or this is my AFI. And I guess I've never wanted to play that card because, you know, I feel like I can't really listen to their first two or three albums anymore because I've grown out of that type of music as an adult. And, you know, the same issue I have with a lot of Descendants stuff and Screeching Weasel and the Queers. Like, I think you sometimes do grow out of music more lyrically. And I think that was what happened with Davey Havoc. I mean, he physically, like, got rid of all his old tattoos. He blacked out his arms because he's like, I'm in a different place in my life, mentally, whatever, spiritually, musically. And this is where he wants to be. And I kind of appreciate that. And the thing is, I do like this type of music too. So I try not to think, you know, if you like the old AFI, you listen to the old AFI. And I don't think this is too far off from their biggest era. He just doesn't scream on these albums anymore.
You know, and maybe that could be for a number of reasons. And I think that a band like this is tough because it's a very distinct era of each version of the band, right? So when you're looking for stuff on YouTube, you might not get exactly what you're looking for because you think, oh, I've heard this song, I kind of like it, I go to check out more, and you're like, well, this band doesn't really sound like this other band that I just got a single for. So it sometimes could be hard to reconcile, I think, for fans. And I definitely see where you're coming from, where, you know, there are people who are like, well, that's not my version of the band. You know, I really look at AFI in 2021 and I kind of feel like in a lot of ways, now they don't sound like them, but they're in a similar career trajectory of a band like The Damned.
Oh, where that's a good perspective. Go ahead.
Yeah, where you have distinctly different eras of The Damned, but playing the long game, they all end up sounding like The Damned. You know, it all kind of morphs together into a true final form, similar to what AFI did with a record like this, where, you know, they do bring in a lot of stylistically things from like Black Audio and whatever, but it never feels heavy handed. It doesn't feel out of place. And there are these little bright spots of like the classic punk AFI kind of popping up, sprinkled throughout the album. It really is, you know, kind of not, I want to say the end of a journey, but like kind of where the characters and the story should be at this point, where, you know, there is still that little I'm going to do pun intended, fire inside from where it was when it started.
Oh, that was bad.
It was right there. I plucked it. Low-hanging fruit, and I pulled that low-hanging fruit. But there is that spark still in the band, and you can hear it throughout this album as well. And, you know, you hear me on the show talking a lot about sometimes how, like, you know, there is that thing where the band kind of gets too far away from, you know, what made them great to begin with. And I think AFI isn't one of those bands, because they always know how to just hit the little tip of their toe back on that home base and then, you know, run wild from there. So I think this record is great. It starts off really strong with a song called Twisted Tongues. I'm really partial to later side A, which is On Your Back and Begging for Trouble. Some of the stuff on side B really pops as well. Death of the Party, really good stuff throughout this album. And I really encourage people to check it out on whatever streaming service that you are fanciful of these days.
I love that you said side B. Sadly, I do not have the record yet. I'm finding that the records now ship like a week or two after the album comes out. I would say Record Store Day might have did them in, but there it's universal. I'm pretty sure that they have to deal with Record Store Day.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't have the vinyl either, but the one page that I'm on, so I can have the track listing in front of me that I can't accidentally hit something and play music, it just has it listed like side A and side B. So I was going with it because I know I'd accidentally end up hitting something and would play music and it would be bad.
I feel your pain. No, definitely check this out. It is Bodies. Again, it's cool that both Rise Against and AFI, AFI was originally on DreamWorks. They got bought out, went to Interscope, Universal, and that's where Rise Against was. And Rise Against released their album last week, so it's nice seeing those Interscope punk bands still around. I mean, it is pretty impressive that Universal holds on to bands like legacy bands like AFI and Rise Against, well past when their contract probably ran out, because they've done way more than three records with them. So it is nice to see that there's still a major label that like believes in the bands they push, even if they're not bands that will sell, you know, move a million units.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of label that I like, where, you know, there's other subdivisions that they kind of break off into where it might not be exactly the label that you got brought up to, but it's kind of like NXT, where it's still equal, but not the same in its own way. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
You're still on the team. You're still essentially on the main roster, but we don't have to, you know, write you off on our taxes for the main roster.
Yeah. I have no idea how the record business currently works. I'm sure it's a giant cluster, but it is nice to see that bands like these are still getting support from their record label. And, you know, you see the records in the store. Record Store Day was this past week, and hopefully some of you guys got out there. I did not see enough to justify me in getting out of bed that early in the morning. There was a Joe Strummer picture disc, a Johnny Thunders collection. There was a replacement collection. There was a collection from, I think it was like the Outtakes from that album, The Police to Meet Me.
Yeah, I don't know how many more versions of these songs that they have, because they just released like a 4 vinyl set of Please to Meet Me. It's like, so where are these things hiding?
My guess is it's probably the stuff on the vinyl that, like, if you already own the regular album, now you can get it separate. I don't know. But again, not enough to get me out, but I support my record stores as much as I can all the time. So I appreciate that they have one day to call it their Black Friday. And this year it's going to be two. There's going to be another record store day in July.
Cool.
Last year they did three, did very well. I mean, I think that's what kept the record store business alive. I haven't heard of many, if any, record stores that went under during the pandemic. So that is a good thing. I appreciate that.
We're taking the win, man. Any way we can get it.
Yeah, but definitely check this out. Much better than the My Boston's record. Definitely, definitely much
Jesus
better
Christ,
than that.
George.
Loki, dude, Loki. Loki is the latest Disney Plus Marvel vehicle, comes a couple weeks after the Falcon and Winter Soldier series. This is the story of Thor's half evil half brother, stepbrother. It's half brother, right?
It's complicated.
Yeah. It's all right. We won't go into the semantics, but one of the best, I mean, the breakout star of the first Avengers movie, maybe the reason why the second Avengers movie wasn't good because he wasn't really in it. This is just one of the, like, I just love the acting in this show in everything he does. And I am going to let you take it off before I start rambling.
So for those playing along at home, the mercurial villain Loki resumes his role as the god of mischief in a new series that takes place after the events of Avengers Endgame. This is a really cool show. This is yet another example of Marvel's television cinematic universe. Like, I don't know what to label it yet, so let's just not put a label on it.
No, I think this is all part of the Marvel cinematic universe, regardless of whether it's in a movie theater or it's at home. I think it's still MCU across the board.
It works for me. And you know what? they put the money into these things enough that you're like, yeah, it's got to be part of the MCU. It's not like the shows that they put on ABC where you had a minimal budget on and it showed. So this show takes place after Avengers Endgame, and it really does deal with right up front all the timey-wimey issues that happened because of Endgame and because of Steve Rogers going back in time at the end of Endgame. I feel like we're going to end up spoiling some stuff here, and I'm sorry. However, the movie's like, what, 2 years old at this point? So,
You can spoil Endgame. Fuck that. We already did that episode. We can spoil. Okay. If you haven't watched Endgame and you want to watch Loki, I don't know what world you live in. So whatever.
Yes. So the critique that I have of something like Loki, and it's not a bad critique, but it's an honest bit of feedback, is that unlike, you know, Vision and Scarlet Witch, which definitely had ramifications spinning out of certain movies and parts of the cinematic universe, you could kind of watch that on your own and still have an enjoyable experience. Now, granted, I know I said, and I stand by, that it started way too slow and it took a little long to pick up, but it turned out to be pretty good. You know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you might be a little bit in the dark about some of this stuff if you hadn't seen the movies. But Loki, things that happen previous in other movies, including Thor, The Dark World, the third Thor movie, which was awesome, but I'm flaking on right now. And the Avengers movies, like they tie.
Oh, Ragnarok.
Ragnarok. Thank you. I keep wanting to say Love and Thunder, but it's not out yet. It ties very much into Loki. So this show is, I think, of the three, the most you kind of have to be in the know to really fully enjoy. Because there's stuff that happens that directly affects what is happening in Loki. Now, that being said, it's very well done. It's very clever. They do a lot of fun things with it. And that's one of the things I have to say I appreciate about the Marvel Cinematic Universe TV shows, mm-hmm. is that they take chances. They take chances, and not only do they make individual series nothing like the other series that are going to be accompanying them over the several months in between movies, they also do some fun, like weird stuff in this movie. And they're going to see some shots in this thing where you're like, you know, some stuff, it looks like very much they didn't spend a ton of money. But then when it does look like they spend a ton of money, it elevates everything else in this show. So I loved, and I'm not going to spoil anything because there's some stuff that pops up in there that you're going to pop for. So I highly recommend it. I love that they got Owen Wilson in here, and Owen Wilson, they're leaning into the fact that he's an older man now. And like his face is marvelous with that nose of his. He's not my preferred Wilson brother, but nonetheless, he shines in the show. He's really, really great. And the kind of like comedic beats that he's known for plays in perfectly against Tom Hiddleston's Loki.
So first of all, I don't know how you prefer Luke Wilson since he hasn't done shit in ages. Nothing personal, but Owen Wilson is the proper Wilson. Go fuck yourself. Minus Man is the best movie of all time.
It's a weird hill to die on, but okay.
Luke Wilson. Owen Wilson is a god amongst men.
Is he secretly a Greek? Is that why you're coming to his aid?
No, there's none. I mean, then I would come to Luke Wilson's aid too. But no, it is all about Owen Wilson and his return to form. Look, this show is great. We're talking about one episode here, so there's not much we can really review. We're talking about feelings and cockles and things like that, and Wilson's and this show. And you called it a movie too. You messed me up. This show is completely, starkly different than The Winter Soldier, and which was starkly different than WandaVision. And that is what's awesome about what's going on right now at Disney Plus, is that none of these shows feel anything alike. And the old knock that people use for Marvel and all superhero shows is they're all the same. Same thing every time, which I think is bullshit with the MCU. I think Ant-Man is nothing like the first Thor movie is like Winter Soldier, or, you know, I think they're all very much their own type of movie, but I get the whole overarching superhero thing, blah, blah, blah. These three shows are so, so different. And it does not just like, oh, this type of thing worked, let's just keep running it into the ground. WandaVision is like nothing I've ever seen before. I felt Falcon and Winter Soldier was a little more like a traditional superhero knock 'em down, beat 'em up fight, but it done very well on a TV platform. This one is like a lot of talking. Like the whole first episode was just like long soliloquies between people. And it's great because it really sets up what you want to hear about. I will tell you this, and this is a spoiler on the show. The DC universe has spent like a billion hours of like television shows and movies trying to create this multiverse that kind of, they almost try to bandage it together from the shit they created in the DC universe, both TV and movies and everything being different and different. They try to make it seem like they didn't fuck up by having different actors on TV and the movies by calling it a multiverse. And it is garbage, hot garbage, and you will agree with that because you stopped reviewing the DC TV shows 2 years ago on the show, which means you don't care about it either. So I'm going to put my foot down and say that in a 3-minute cartoon inside the Loki TV show, within the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes of the show, there is a 3-minute cartoon done in the style of like Fallout, Pip-Boy, Lost style animation, like here's what happened. They explained the entire multi-universe and time travel. And I was like, wow, this is writing.
So to be fair, I agree with you. I have stopped by and large reviewing DC TV shows because once you hit Crisis, for me, it was kind of over. Like there was kind of no reason to kind of keep on. Now, granted, I am watching Superman and Lois and I'm very much enjoying it. I did review Stargirl last year when it came out and I thought it was exceptional. Probably the best thing that they've ever put out with on DC television. I watched the Doom Patrol and I love the Doom Patrol. So I'm still reviewing DC stuff, but the WB DC stuff more or less is kind of wrapping up. Supergirl is actually wrapping up its final season. So there's really no reason to talk about that anymore. There's still cool stuff going on. I'm still watching it, but it's just really not in the forefront because after Crisis, what's left to do, you know? That being said, I agree with you as well. It's a huge misstep where they had like a built-in audience that they could have raised up and brought these TV actors, and maybe not all of them, but like, man, how did you not bring Stephen Amell, who like launched the whole thing, up to be Green Arrow in this fucking movie? Like, it's a no-brainer. But you know what? We all know the decision-making process is going over on there. So, and who knows how much longer that's going to be. So whatever. Marvel, they got it right. And they finally, once they were able to bring everything in-house, now granted, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and some other bullshit that's been out there was pre- you know, Kevin Feige getting involved, pre-bringing it in with Disney Plus. But, you know, by and large, they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what their audiences want, and they just keep feeding it to us.
Yeah,
and we're chomping down on it like it's Kobayashi.
We're going to ignore the Inhumans. We'll just put that away.
No, I forgot about that.
Yeah, there's some pretty bad stuff out there, too.
It was the worst shit ever.
It was so bad. But, like, Loki, this is definitely a different, you know, this is a, he, I don't want to spoil much, but basically he ends up in a kind of a purgatory where they explain to him, you can't fuck with time. We're the time police. It's very time cops. And it is really, really cool how they go about stylistically. You know, you have great actors. Let great actors act. And that's what they do. Like Owen Wilson talks a lot in this. Loki, whose name I looked up before because I was rambling because I was trying to get his name. Tom Hiddleston? Yes. He, like all the actors in the show are fantastic and they let them go. And that's what you should do if you have A-list actors on your show. And I love the fact that we know there's a movie coming up called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse. Or is it Spider-Man in the Multiverse? Which one's the multiverse?
Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, so we know there's a movie coming up, but they really haven't, other than the time traveling in Endgame, which was done very well and very simplistically, that they, you know, it's very easy to understand, unlike most, you know, Back to the Future type situations. Very easy to understand. Here, they're laying the groundwork. They're basically like, here's the multiverse. We're going to just spell it out for you so you're not wondering later what the hell is going on. That's great. You're setting the stone. You're setting the seeds down for what's coming, and I'm excited for it. I am excited to see how this fits in with Doctor Strange, which is what WandaVision was leading into. I'm curious to see where they're gonna head with the Falcon and Winter Soldier. I'm very, very curious to see how this show. There's a lot of Easter eggs and a lot of fan theory on what's going on with Loki. And you might, if you want to go on the web after you watch it, you'll see a lot of these things. Someone slow-mode some shots with people that might be in the background. it is a very, very interesting what might happen. I'm here for it. I'm hoping, obviously, as many fans, you know, I'm armchair booking here, that this somehow, you know, there is a multiverse that has mutants, and this is how the X-Men come into it. You know, Deadpool could literally just drop in because of this. There's so many ways they could do it, though. I think they're going to write it better than that. I don't think they're going to just use this gimmick to bring people in, other than maybe Deadpool, because you can do that. I think it's going to be a little bit smarter built, but this is a really well-acted story. It is a little slower, I will agree. Not slow, like WandaVision wasn't slow. It's just that the show episodes were so short that you couldn't really get, they had to get to their point quicker. And, you know, whether they should have done the first three episodes together or whether they should have, you know, there's maybe different ways in hindsight could have done it, but that show ended more than well enough to suck you in if you binged it afterwards. This one is really good. It's just a lot of building anticipation, and I'm here for it, and we're going to continue to watch it and have a full review at the end.
Yeah, six episodes. I'm also enjoying the brevity of it. I'm enjoying that they're not trying to stretch it out to 8-9 episodes. You get six. We're gonna throw all the budget into six episodes. You're going to like it.
Yeah, and that leads us into another limited series that, while brief, such great acting. I can't recommend enough Mayor of Easttown. And this is Kate Winslet's return to form. Evan Peters, last scene on WandaVision. There is Guy Pearce. Like, so many great actors are in this. I feel like this is this new wave of HBO pulling back in people that we might have forgotten about, like a Hugh Grant or the gentleman who was in the Third Day, who was also in The Young Pope. Why am I blanking on his name right now? We'll deal with that while we keep talking. They're pulling back in. They're doing these limited series with great actors that we haven't seen in a very long time and giving them a platform to do great things on. And Kate Winslet here owns this. I mean, this is a story of a kind of a washed, not washed, but small town detective who's like kind of just phoning in her job at this point. She's had a murder case she's been sitting on for a year that she can't gain progress on. She's not really doing great. They're going to bring in the county detectives to kind of help, you know, help her along a little bit. And while this is happening, there is another murder, and she needs to piece this together with the help of a local sheriff detective. And it is just wild how well they did the small town murder mystery, to the point where, and we've seen a lot of these, we've watched this could have easily been True Detectives 4. You know,
that's what I was going to say.
We talk about Dry after this, very similar. And that's why I wanted to probably do the two together, because it's a very similar type of story, but not at all the same execution. This is like, by every episode ends in some crazy cliffhanger. You want to see what happens. The acting is incredible. You feel for this woman who, you know, she's best known for like landing the perfect 3-point basketball shot when she was in high school. And now she's a detective, and she's like still known as just playing basketball when she was in high school. And I love this. I love the unraveling. You know, you're a big murder mystery fan. You always have been. I know you're a huge fan of Clue. You're a huge fan of those type of games and movies. I love a great unraveling story that actually nails it at the end. This does that. What are your thoughts on Mayor of Easttown?
So I was in my comments going to say this could have been the season of True Detective we were all waiting for, but haven't gotten.
No. Season 3 was good. I'm rewatching it now. Season 3 was very good.
No, I agree with you. But you know what I mean? It's just like,
this could have been
that
one.
That level of True Detective that I don't feel that we've gotten since the beginning, where like, and even the beginning kind of didn't end great.
No.
Season 3, I thought, was a more well-balanced season, but this was like, if you had called this True Detective, it would have been like, oh God, we must watch True Detective again. I love this show because, yes, I do love mysteries. I do love a good unraveling in a story. I do love the good aha moment that comes when the detective finally figures it out. What I thought they did great with this was, small town stories like this normally take place in small towns, more in the Midwest than they do in places like Pennsylvania. And they brought a real cool energy into this show where, you know, one of Mare's issues is that she knows everybody in her town and she's well known in her town. So it's not like so much, you know, this is a cop that's moved to this area, doesn't know anyone. this is a cop who's lived in this town her entire life. She knows everyone and everyone's business and what everyone is into. And I think that by not putting it in the Midwest or like in the South or in places where, like, you know, you normally get a small town story like this, it really did a great job of differentiating itself from, you know, your standard fare, and also provided more challenges for the detective in the show, because, like, you know, you kind of think you know everything about everyone having been here your whole life, and then you come to find out you really don't, and that there are still secrets in your town. And I thought that was really good.
I agree with you. We actually spent a lot. So the acting is so good in this that, like, they nail the Southern Pennsylvania accent so well that I had to double check on it, because it comes off sounding so much like a Baltimore accent. But I had my friend Chris McNally, like, who is in Baltimore and Maryland, and I'm like, listen to this accent. Tell me what you think. He goes, no, that's also a Pennsylvanian accent. It's like the suburbs outside of Philadelphia accent. I'm like, that's crazy how well they nailed it. Because I'm watching, so for the first time ever, I've got Allison watching The Wire. She promised to watch the first few episodes, and if she likes it, she'll continue. I'm like, this is the greatest show ever made. You have never watched it. You need to watch this show. So now that it's in HD, I'm like, let's try it again. And she's watching, and I'm realizing then the first few episodes of that show, nobody really has a real Baltimore accent. I feel like the acting isn't as, like, tight as it should have been, as they try to do now. And I think it gets better in The Wire. But here, the accents on here, especially Kate Winslet, knowing she has a British accent, like, it is so uncanny to hear that. And even Evan Peters, hearing him do it too, so well done. This has a couple great pivots. There are points where, like, this show is dark. Look, this show story is a story about broken families, a lot of broken families, and broken families on top of broken families. There's a lot of poverty, and there's a lot of, like, middle class suburbs. You see a lot of different types of people, and everyone's got a bit of sadness to them. And there is one episode where there's a couple jokes throughout, and I actually laughed. There's, like, the funny episode in the middle. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. There's one. I think it ends very dark, but, like, throughout it, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty funny. Like, they finally are getting a little lighthearted on this, and then it just twists and turns. And if you like that type of show, if you love, I will say, this is up there with the last season of Fargo. I think this is as good as Perry Mason, which we can't forget came out last year, was one of the best murder mystery shows I saw as well. That was more courtroom drama, though. This is definitely more of a whodunit and an unraveling, and I think they did it well in this. I got a little bit confused in some points. I was not confused, but I was like, where are they going to go? How are they going to do it? They do some false pivots that I think they tried a little bit too hard, but in the end, it all pays off. It is just a great show from start to finish. It's all available right now on HBO, so definitely check it off on HBO Max. And, you know, kudos to Kate Winslet. I think she deserves all the awards for this.
Oh, yeah. Back up that awards truck, man. Just give it all. This show, everyone on the show was great. And, yo, Guy Pearce popping up out of nowhere. It's been so long since I've seen Guy Pearce in anything. And everybody in the show is stellar. Yeah. Even the kids that they have acting in the show do a great job acting. So, yeah, I mean, if you have HBO Max, this one's a no-brainer. Which I haven't really done as much lately, watching a show in like a day and a half, 2 days. But, man, I knocked this thing right out because I could not put it down, to the fact where, like, I needed to put myself to bed. Otherwise, I would have done it in one. And that's not good for a man my age. But, yeah, I definitely highly endorse this. I definitely didn't have my phone out very much during this show. So no complaints. Check it out.
Yeah, I'm now, like, sold on murder mysteries. Again, I'm doing True Detective season 3 again right now. I'm doing The Wire. Like, I'm just, I'm getting myself, like, in just really in deep on these. And, you know, if you have any recommendations on any that we should watch, please let me know. You know, I'm ready for it. I'm trying to move a little bit away from not just horror, and I feel like this is a good route when it's done well. Again, there's a lot of bad ones too, so I try to be very careful. I do like a True Detective, Mayor of Easttown type of feel to it, where it's a little bit more downtrodden, you know, a little bit darker. But highly recommend this. Can't say enough. And, you know, I don't know. So this isn't a show that's going to have a season 2. This is definitely, I believe it was based off of a book. So I think this is from start to finish a thing. I'm just curious to see what other books this person has. So I'm actually looking to the author after this.
Yeah, and I love that as well. I love the one and done season. I cannot say enough good things about one and done. Just tell the story and then be done with it, and then tell another story. So good.
Do you know what show is one and done? Don't think too hard. What do you know? What's one and done?
Was it Lovecraft Country?
No, I wish that's not one and done. I think there is a second season coming. Clarice has been silenced. Clarice. not for what you thought. Do not. I know where you're going to go. Do not go there. It did not get canceled because it was so bad. Like that, that show on Netflix that we watched, reviewed a couple weeks back. Not Justice League. What's the other one with the superheroes?
Jupiter's Legacy.
Oh, murdered after. Like, it didn't even like last a week before they killed it. They like cut everybody's contracts so they can go do other things because it was so bad. Clarice has been canceled, but it's, again, not because it was shitty and because they couldn't do anything with this IP. The problem was the whole CBS MGM like merger, Paramount Plus, like competing online digital platforms. Like, it just, the negotiations completely fell apart, and Clarice kind of was it died because of this whole giant mega merger, which, if anybody doesn't know, MGM is being bought by Amazon, and that kind of messes up the CB, you know, Amazon Prime competes directly with Paramount Plus, CBS, you know, it's, this whole thing is a giant mess. Then there's the fact that Dino Laurinaitis' family owns the Hannibal stories, anything that was from Red Dragon, and anything that isn't Silence of the Lambs, while Paramount CBS owns Silence of the Lambs. It is just a giant mess. And it just negotiations fell apart. Clarice is dead. It's done. It's not happening. And which is probably a good thing because that show is terrible. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel bad for the actors and the crew and people who, you know, are planning on these shows to make money and like support their families and stuff and also to continue their careers. But man, the thing stunk on ice.
Look, I agree with you, but I feel like TV shows, you know what you're getting into bed with. I think it's 9 out of 10 of them get canceled after one season. So I get what you mean, but I also feel like most people should go into that business assuming they're only doing one season.
A lot of people don't even make it past the pilot, so
yeah,
they are.
And that's kind of where I think these days there aren't even pilots anymore. Are there pilots like there used to be? I feel like it's either picked up or it's not. And if there is a pilot, it's screened for the studio and not for the public.
That's what it is nowadays. I mean, back in the day, you used to see shows pop it up and they would just kind of test out the waters, but now it's like, the pilot is always inadvertently the first episode if the show gets picked up.
Yeah, exactly. It's very weird, especially nowadays where you drop a whole season in one shot. It's not as much of a situation where you can sit there and, well, did that get low ratings? We'll kill it. We'll only order like 3 and order more if it does well. I just feel like that world doesn't exist, but I don't watch network television, so I'm not 100% sure if that's the way it is anymore. And I don't think I ever want to watch network television again. So I'm perfectly fine with that. I'm happy. The Dry. I wanted to continue this like murder mystery thing, and I decided to choose The Dry, which just came out on demand. And this is a show that was highly regarded by critics, not as highly regarded by fans. And I completely understand why. I believe you told me this movie lives up to its name. It is dry. It is slow. There is a murder mystery here. There is a murder-suicide at the beginning of a family, and there is a detective comes in to try to solve this. No, he doesn't come in to solve this. He's kind of given this case by, like, family members who are like, you need to check this out. You need to look into this. And he kind of falls into this unraveling. And I feel like they do a good job getting from point A to point B, but I didn't necessarily love the journey.
You know, I kind of felt the same way about it. For those listening at home, Aaron Falk returns to his drought-stricken hometown to attend a tragic funeral, but his return opens a decade-old wound, the unsolved death of a teenage girl. So similar in feel to Mayor of Easttown, where you have an old thing that kind of seemingly ties to a new thing, and then, like, you know, he literally shows up for the funeral. So he's not the local police. He's Australian federal police. So he's, like, you know, he's essentially a fed. And, the case kind of gets thrust upon him. And, you know, the movie, you know, I called George saying the joke. I was like, oh, did you watch the movie Dry? It lives up to its name. It's long. It is an hour and 57 minutes, and it's based in a town that has not had rain in God knows how long. So everything is completely dry. It takes place in Australia. It's a very Australian movie. Everyone says, good day. Like, you know, throughout the movie, you're like, oh, yeah, you're like thinking about Crocodile Dundee or some shit. But, yo, that's how people actually greet each other in Australia, apparently. The detective part of the story is good, but it does take a long time to get to where it needs to go.
And I wonder if that's because it's an Australian movie. I do wonder if that's just like there's a different tone there, you know, than there is here. Again, going from Mayor of Easttown to this was a little bit more jarring. This was definitely a well done movie. This is a very well acted movie. It's just the solving of the mystery is not as key as it is the you know, just the talking between the locals. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. And again, it does have a good parallel to Mayor of Easttown because there is a lot of personal interaction between the locals and the cops, and also a lot of like long history and beef between the locals and the cops. And I'm not saying that Mayor of Easttown ran, you know, but it moves at a faster pace than this movie does. You know, this movie deals a lot. I mean, they both deal a lot with trauma and the long-term effects of trauma and dealing with, like, you know, grief that could be you've been hanging on to for decades. However, you know, there is the way where an American-style show deals with that, where things are consistently happening. And again, not fast, but you don't feel like an hour has gone by. Whereas this movie, and maybe it is indicative of the way that they make movies in Australia, you know, and you know what? In a lot of ways, when you look at a movie like the original Mad Max, The Road Warrior.
I was so going to go there. The original, no. Mad Max, The Road Warrior is the second one. The original Mad Max.
Yeah, you know what I mean. The original one where it is a much slower movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is more drawn out. The conversation, the dialogue is, it takes a little longer to get off the ground. So in that way, like, you know, I do appreciate that. I do appreciate where, you know, you have local filmmakers making movies the way that they should be made in those areas. But at the same time, having just watched Mayor of Easttown, it's kind of a, you know, I was looking at my phone a bunch during this movie. Very well acted, a lot of great acting, a lot of great character work in this movie. But, you know, I just kind of was like, I need to go to bed. But I was glad the way everything shook out. And I thought it was a very good unraveling as far as the mystery goes.
I didn't know Eric Bana was Australian until I saw this. I don't know why. I just didn't think of him as Australian. But Eric Bana is Australian. I was really impressed with how they tied the dry into this, the literal dryness of the country and the fact that they always mention it throughout it, that it's a dry season. It's, you know, it's a bad drought. It's very dry. But then the thing they do at the end that we're not going to reveal because I don't want to spoil it. I was a little surprised they went that route. It was pretty awesome how they try to do that. The weapon of choice at the end was very, very surprising. Wouldn't you agree?
100%. You know, there definitely is things that they set up in this movie that they fully deliver upon, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. So if you want, again, go into it. I would watch this before Mayor of Easttown. I do think it's very well done. I think it's just a little bit long as well. The Dry, featuring Eric Bana, that is available on demand now. And that's all we've got this week. I feel like I just want to talk about things, but I don't have anything to talk about other than, you know, my son did a magic performance at a party last week, and he flew, and he still won't stop talking about how he flew.
I saw that. It was pretty cool, man.
Pretty impressive. I've now realized my child has a future in magic, and we'll see where that takes us. It is his birthday on Thursday, so he is turning 4. He's officially 4.
That's amazing, man.
It's nuts. I can't believe it. And he actually hasn't joined us today. Maybe because you didn't come in. I think that might be it.
I think that's the case, yeah.
Anyway, we'll join everybody again next week, possibly live, and appreciate you all. John, take us. No, John, how can the kids reach you?
You find me on Instagram at JohnMaguireRPG. I'm, you know, posting pictures and stuff. I occasionally pop on to Twitter, same handle, at JohnMaguireRPG. George, where can the people find you?
People can reach me at GLKCreative on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us at Mai Tai Happy Hour on Instagram. We are on YouTube at, look up Mai Tai TV. You'll find it. We are at MaiTaiTV.com. That's where all our archive is, dating back to all our 216 episodes.
Wow.
Please rate, review, and subscribe us. We appreciate all of you. Let us know what you think. We're very easy to get a hold of, or at least I am. You know, John makes it tough for some reason, but I'm always here, ready to respond to fans. Let us know what you want to hear. And, you know, I'm excited to see your book come soon.
You know what's funny, man? In hindsight, if I ever come to you again and say, hey, man, you know what would be a great idea? Recording an audiobook. Just, you know, tell me no, man. Maybe not the best idea. It's a lot of work.
Oh, my God. I wish I knew. You haven't talked to me about that at all. I didn't realize the audiobook part was, I forgot about the audiobook.
You know, I think most people have, but I'm in the process of recording an audiobook now. You know, things that I never in my life thought I would end up doing. But
I'm sorry. I'm stopping the music. I got to ask you some questions really quickly.
Sure. Go for it.
I knew there was an audiobook coming, but I didn't realize it. Like, you can't audiobook like the AD&D manual, like the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons manual. It's like there's charts and shit. Like, how are you audiobooking your thing? Is it not like all charts of like stats and stuff?
No, there's not a lot of charts. So, for instance, what I'm doing is I'm recording section by section, or sections that feel good and right together, I'll record together. So, you know, the forward is, I think, 2 minutes. There's a couple sections that are 2 minutes. There's a section that's 8 minutes. I'm in the process of actually recording characters right now and talking to you about, like, you know, where they're from, their age, their hometown, their pronouns, you know, how many luck points they have. And then when it comes to the stats, there's just 6 stats. So it's action, brains, brawn, cool, charm, and guts. So once I get through the first block, I'll say action 8, you know, brains 6, brawn 5, charm 3, cool 4, guts 5. But that's it. I mean, I'm doing this mostly because, and then I'll, you know, read the description of, like, you know, with the character's backstory. But throughout the game, there isn't a ton of things where it's like, oh my God, it's a chart. You know, I did this more for, you know, I know everyone learns differently. I know sometimes people see a book with a lot of pages, and, you know, me especially, like, I see a 400-page D&D book and I'm like, I'm not going to read that whole thing cover to cover. But I want people to always have the opportunity to learn the way that they want to learn. And also, like, you know, if a person has trouble seeing stuff, they could pop this in their car, listen to my dulcet tones or whatever. And if they don't know the game word by word or everything that's in there, they'll at least have enough of an idea and be able to run the game for their friends. Okay. Or be able to be a part of it.
Yeah. I always thought of the handbooks, the guidebooks for role-playing games as more of a something you earmark and you always go back to those sections. I've never thought of them as something as you read straight through like a book. That's why I was a little bit confused when you said you were doing an audiobook, because I always, again, dog-eared. Like, that's why I also wanted you to make a real zine, like a real book, because I feel like that is the easiest way. Like, you know, oh my God, I forgot what that rule was. Just quickly open it up. Where even like a PDF is a little bit more challenging to dog ear and get to the page you want to get to. But I never even thought about an audiobook for this. So I think it is very innovative that you're going this route.
Thanks, man. You know, it's cool. I mean, there is a physical book. Our friend Derek is in the process of finishing up the layout for the book. So there's going to be a physical book. There's a PDF that's going to be really easy to read for people, whether they're reading it on a tablet, a screen reader, whatever. It's going to be easy for everybody. And then there's the audiobook. And like I said, I don't expect everyone to get note for note out of the audiobook, but at least it'll give you the idea of what you need to do. Or, you know, if you get overwhelmed reading the rules, which are simple, like our rules is so easy, but I can't imagine that it's easy for everybody. So I'm just trying to give everyone the ability to feel a part of this and be able to play the game and run the game the way they want to play it. And also, you know, I'm good at talking. So here we are.
I can't wait for it. I can't wait to have it in my hands. I am super stoked. Where can people get more information on your RPG when it finally gets reavailable for sale?
Well, when it finally gets reavailable for sale, there'll be a link in my Instagram bio. I'm in the process of building a small website on Squarespace. And, you know, that was another thing I didn't really think about going into this, you know, building a website. But here we are. You learn new things every day. And that's navigating Squarespace, which is easy, but it's not what I planned on doing. But yeah, I mean, there will be plenty of ways to, you'll find out about it. You're going to hear more about it on the show when it comes out. You know, when I have a little more, you know, up my sleeve with it, once I know it's off to press, you'll be able to pick it up at exaltedfuneral.com once it's actually released and been shipped to the patrons. So a lot of cool things coming up.
I definitely know it's coming out in physical book form, because I've had many conversations with George in the middle of the day about paper stock, just so you know. paper stock and card stock and cover stock have been a very long conversation on multiple occasions with George, your other George. I am so excited. Anyway, I think we could put the music back on and you can take us out.
Everybody remember, be nice. Aloha. Can it be the Paloma?